You're listening to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business. Hello and welcome to this episode of the AHDB podcast. I'm Eleanor Holdsworth, and today we'll be looking at data-driven decisions, specifically how cereals and oilseeds monitor farmers have been using a machinery review to get a good handle on their farm costs. We'll hear from Harry Henderson, AHDB's machinery guru, as well as our Dan Patrick and Pembrokeshire Monitor Farm hosts, Richard Orr and Tom Rees. They both completed a machinery review recently, and they'll tell us about their experiences. First up, here's Harry with a background to the machinery review and what the Monitor Farm Network found out.
We did the machinery reviews because we realised that about 30% of the total cost of growing, say, a tonne of wheat is down to machinery, and that's the labour included. So we thought it was high time, really, that we looked at the machinery usage across the Monitor Farm network and put a pounds and pence cost to all of it. We wanted to do it in a standardised way across the whole of the network. So from Cornwall to Inverness and from Pembrokeshire to Norfolk, we visited 24 farms in total this year. I don't think there's any surprises in what we found. It was more that farms are looking to save costs. There's more interest in saving money by buying good second-hand equipment. There are people out there that want to buy new kit, but the overall trend we found, I'd have to say, was that farms are being run as a way of avoiding paying tax, and machinery is a low-hanging fruit to reduce your tax bill. Now, that's fine, and farms operate a thin profit margin in order to avoid paying tax. That's fine, but if the rural payment system changes, and that's set to do so, and a general consensus is that the rural payments will be cut by 50%, and the remaining 50% will have to be different hoops to be jumped through, then are you planning to run the farm differently in the future? What we found from doing a lot of these reports were that the greatest opportunity to improve efficiencies and cut costs was through establishment. Recreational cultivations are still alive and kicking. So can establishment costs be cut? Do you need to plough so much? Do you need to restructure and subsoil so much? And do you just need to go out with a spade and have a critical eye on what needs to be done to establish a crop by saving a lot of costs? Of course, there's a trend now to go to direct drilling and no-till drilling, and we've seen that direct drilling tends to work with the right level of management, and there's no appreciable reduction in yield. So there is some scope for some serious savings to be had for saving money in establishment and maintaining yields. Crop spraying and harvesting are what they are. They're vital jobs. You can't really reduce them to much of a great extent. There's been some debate about whether a trail machine is more cost effective than a self-propelled, and probably yes, the penny's dropping that to have a self-propelled machine with a meter worth of ground clearance isn't probably paying its way when you've got also seed rape to take care of with a couple of petal sprays and some desiccation, and also seed rape seems to be the diminishing crop in the rotation at the moment. So a self-propelled sprayer takes a lot of paying for if you can get away with a trailed machine. Of course, you perhaps need an extra tractor to pull a trailed machine. That tractor may be required on the fertilizer spreader or on other spring work when it's now on the trailed sprayer. But yeah, there's opportunities to save money in the application of chemicals.
I asked Harry if he thinks what's happening in the Monitor Farm network reflects what's going on in the rest of the UK.
I think it does. We're short of perhaps the biggest, very biggest farms, 6,000 acres and above. We've got a couple of farms that are close to that, 2,500 to 4,000 acres. The challenge for those guys is achieving economies of scale. It's very easy, I think, to get infrastructure in and make sure that you have capacity in your equipment and your labour, but it's very easy for costs to mount up. So economies of scale are particularly difficult to achieve. It's not just gaining scale, gaining acres and spreading your resources across those acres. It's hopefully making more use of those machines across a greater number of acres.
So what should people do with the information?
I think it's working out what the next steps are. Do you need to buy a new tractor? Can you carry on using the same tractor? Again, referring to cultivations, can you get your crops established for less than 100 litres of diesel used in establishment per hectare? So that's a target you can go for. It depends a lot on the farmer, individual farmer, if they prefer to have new machinery that is of no problem and it's under warranty or under a service plan, then that's good risk management. You can have cheaper tractors, you can take a little bit more risk that you may have more downtime. But to be honest, we haven't seen that with older tractors. The downtime isn't any less than the more modern ones. But what is critical is that they are looked after and they are driven well.
Harry told me about a DEFRA report published recently detailing the spending on farm machinery in England.
There was £1.98 billion spent in 2017-2018 on farm machinery in farms in England, and 79% of this was spent on new machinery. In real terms, after adjusting for inflation, the average amount spent on a new wheel tractor has increased by 65% since 2009. And we know really that that's larger tractors, it's more sophisticated tractors, the emissions technology that is now fitted on tractors that was unheard of in 2009 has all been passed to the purchaser. But that's a stark reality of the increase in machinery prices over the last 10 years. One of the interesting things we've also found, or I looked at the Association of Agricultural Engineers Economics Department figures, where in 1964 the total number of tractors sold was about 32,000, and the average horsepower was 62.8. In 2018, the number of tractors sold in the UK is about 12,000, and the average horsepower is 166. But interestingly, if you boil it down to the total horsepower sold, it's 2 million in 1964 and almost exactly 2 million in 2018. So whilst labour numbers have gone down dramatically, the amount of power that we're committing to farming across the United Kingdom has remained the same.
Does that mean we're becoming more efficient?
Only with labour, but not necessarily with power. So we're not doing more with less. We're doing the same with the same almost. The knock-on effect of reducing cultivations and going to a more one-pass system will be, unfortunately, the effect on labour. I think we've discovered that reviewing the possibility of going to no-till reduces, A, the tractor hours dramatically, and, of course, reduces the labour requirement dramatically as well. Still has a huge peaks and troughs, so you'd have a huge peak in the autumn when you need to get drilled up quickly, and in the spring where you want to achieve a one-pass system, and that has to be done in very small window of ideal conditions because it will go from being too wet to too dry very, very quickly. But it's the overall labour requirement could well go down as well, which we'll take some planning for and some forethought if the subsidy system changes in the future. And so it's going to be a challenge, really, that to find skilled staff on a more seasonal basis. Yeah, it's a challenge. Other parts of the world have to find seasonal staff that perhaps have never driven a tractor before, and they have to be trained up, and they may not come back to the farm again. And that might be one season's use of staff, but that's how they operate on in other parts of the world. I'm not suggesting that's the right way to do it, but that's where Australian, American, South American farmers are forced to do. If a farmer wants to have a look at his own machinery costs, there's a number of tools we have on the AHDB Soils and Oilseeds website. There's a paper-based calculator which you can print off and just fill in with a pencil and calculate your costs per hour. And you'll see that the tractor is costed per hour. Then you can add the implement to it, which is costed per hectare. And then you can divide the cost per hour from the tractor across the hectares worked and produce your total operation cost, adding the labour costs in as well. So you can get a cost for each operation. There is also a tool, a spreadsheet-based tool, where you can manipulate some numbers. You can put the cost of the tractor in as it comes onto the farm, guesstimate a number of what its value is coming off the farm, and spread it across the years on the farm, and see whether those figures for each hour of operation stack up. If they don't, if they're too high, then you can lengthen the time that the tractor's on the farm for. Perhaps the tractor's too expensive, you need to drop the price of the tractor a little bit to make the numbers work. But it's something that you can just manipulate and see where you need to be, where you're at, and try and achieve the right cost. I think there's a danger with farmers that they're equipped so well that they can deal with any condition at any time. And I think that needs to be addressed. If you're in that sort of situation, then do you really need that kind of size of machinery to go farming with? Can you get away with a smaller tractor? If you want to save fuel, it's not necessarily changing the brand, it's probably changing the size, which is going to have the greatest impact, despite what the manufacturers would say. We ran some costs on combining, and we widely publicised that the cheapest combine came in at £41 per hectare, fuel, driver, depreciation, repairs, all in at £41 a hectare. And this was for a hire machine, a 25-foot cut New Holland up in Brigg in North Lincolnshire. But surprisingly, a rather more modern John Deere combine came in, single rotor combine in Bridge North, that had a 30-foot cut header, cut a similar amount of hectares at 526 hectares, also at £41 a hectare. And I think it was a case of realistic accounting. The machine came in at the right price. The farmer's looking to keep it for 8 to 10 years, which is a good time to keep it for. If you keep it for 4 years, then you can see that that cost would easily double. So you can get combining costs down. It's achieving that balance between having the right amount of crop to cut for the size of the machine. Too big a machine on too small a crop means that costs will go up quite quickly. We've got a John Deere six-walker machine here with a 25-foot cut header, tackling 786 hectares. Came in at an all-in cost of £44.22 per hectare. Now that's cheap, that is admittedly cheap, but that combine's got an awful lot of hectareage to get around with a 25-foot header. So there is the risk then of missing harvest windows, missing quality windows. So it's very much a balance of getting the crop in a timely fashion, but not having such a large combine, the cost of the combine is excessive.
Harry and the team came up with 5 key points from the machinery review, which were common to farms across the UK.
Low diesel usage per hectare, and we've said using low diesel is not using the tractor rather than opting for a more fuel-efficient tractor. The fuel-efficient tractor is great, but that can be lost by running tyre pressures at the wrong pressure, so you've really got to work hard to achieve that fuel efficiency. But running a tractor less is obviously the quickest way of consuming less fuel. The top 25% of farmers are using less than 100 litres of diesel per hectare per crop. So combining, establishment, crop care, everything is under 100 litres of fuel. Low machine costs per hour. This alludes to really keeping the machine for as long as you dare, but we found that a cost ranging from £17 an hour to £24 an hour for a 190 to 250 horsepower tractor is about where you need to be, and you can cost that out with the calculator on the Cereals and Oilseeds website. Low cost of combining, we found, is an important thing to achieve. The average for the Monitor Farm network is £66 a hectare. You need probably 70 hectares per metre of combine header to go at to make it cost effective. So a 10 metre header would be cutting at least 700 hectares. As an example, one of the cheapest combines we had was a 7.3 metre combine cutting 569 hectares. So that had a fair amount to go at. Low repair costs are also important. We found that it's imperative for machines to be well serviced in the winter rather than fixed in the heat of the harvest. Well-trained and responsible operators are also absolutely key. We did think that we'd try and look into the repair costs of different machines, but it's just too difficult to separate out what was machine failure and what was operator error. And you can imagine the arguments when we were trying to establish what happened when a machine needed to be repaired in the heat of the harvest and whose fault was it? Was it the machine? Was it the operator? Quite a difficult thing to nail down. But of course, driving these costs down by well-trained, responsible operators is absolutely key. Tactical hiring of machines was also a clever thing to do. Perhaps the combine could be hired. We found some of the highest cost combines were machines that were owned. When I say owned, the payments were being made every year for 3 years, but it was the equity contained within that combine that was being used as the fund to get the next combine. Payments were being made the same, but the equity that the farmer owns within that combine is slowly diminishing. So the farmer can't opt to buy that machine, it has to go back and the payments keep on going. But it's that equity that's held within that machine. Could that money be used or be sweated for other operations on the farm rather than sitting in a combine that's slowly depreciating? So depreciation is another one. Depreciation is the largest cost in running a machine at 33% of all costs. Low depreciation is important. If you can keep the machines for longer, then that's going to have a dramatic effect on it. Or you can buy the machines well. Good second hand is a good option. And planning to keep the machine for 7 years or beyond is always a good thing. If you're changing machines after 3 or 4 years, then you're likely paying the highest depreciation possible. So that's the five, I believe. Low depreciation, low repair costs we've covered, low diesel usage, we've got a target of 100 litres per hectare for growing a crop of wheat, low cost of tractors per hour, and low cost of combining by either tactical hiring or keeping the machine for longer, and matching the machine to capacity is always a balance. But the better you can do that, and that might be through a balanced rotation, so you're running the combine for longer periods of time across the season, then that can all help in reducing machinery costs. So the final thoughts I came up with really were these: low cost of establishment, so we should be doing it for under £100 a hectare, and there's a lot of scope. I think there's a lot of min-till drills that are used in a full-till system, so can the amount of tillage be reduced without sacrificing yield? And is yield still king? Yes, but not at any cost. I think you have to put that caveat in. So we've found that those reduced tillage guys are still getting 10 tonnes per hectare, whereas your plough-based guys may also be getting 10 tonnes, but they're putting a lot more cost and effort into bashing seedbeds into shape. The trailed sprayer versus self-propelled debate will rage on, but with trail sprayers becoming more capable, having higher road speeds, which means the better brakes and more powerful engines and heavier chassis and bigger tanks, just adds up to a more expensive machine to keep on the farm. And if you're not using a self-propelled sprayer that much for high clearance work or for clean row end work, where you're turning cleanly out of potato rows perhaps, then a self-propelled sprayer is perhaps a luxury. Economies of scale, I think there's always a train of thought that if you get that extra piece of land, you can spread your costs across it. We've found through benchmarking activities that extra land can end up being so expensive to knock into shape, especially on a 3-year FBT, that it's uneconomic to farm, and the home farm ends up subsidising that extra piece of land. And it shouldn't be seen really as when you've gained more scale, you've gained more land, that you can afford that extra tractor. And unfortunately, you've got to stretch that extra tractor across that land in order to achieve economies of scale. Ownership: should you own the combine? Should you own the sprayer? Should you hire it? I think there's some good deals to be had in hiring. You know the costs, you know the costs for the next 5 years potentially, so you can plan and you can budget for those costs to be taken into account. May not be the cheapest way of getting harvester capacity on farm, but it's cheaper than making payments to a machine, and when it comes to trade in the machine, the dealer wants the machine back, then you get a new machine in simply because you need to own it, then that can be an expensive way of getting harvest capacity on farm. One of the challenges that I can see coming up on farms, especially cereal farms, will be the extremely seasonal demands on staff. We reduce the cultivations, there's less for staff to do. They're extremely busy for an intense couple of weeks in the spring and an intense couple of weeks in the autumn where drilling is occurring. And then that's it, the workload drops off the edge of a cliff. Now, that's going to take some considerable thought how those sorts of challenges are addressed. Is it seasonal staff? Is it not regular staff? It's more seasonal staff coming into the farm, like in other parts of the world. Can the farm be diversified to other parts of the business? Where can the farm be diversified to accommodate the staff in other areas of the farm? There's other projects going on, there's other parts of the farm being used for other types of businesses, maybe not even be agriculture. But it's going to be, when cost control comes in, then it's going to leave the staff with a different work profile as well, and that's going to be a challenge in the future.
What will happen to food prices as a result of Brexit?
What should I do if I'm employing EU nationals?
And what support is available for my business?
Visit ahdb.org.uk/Brexit
for answers to all these questions and more.
So Richard Orr and Dan Patrick was one of the monitor farmers to do the machinery review. And here he is, back in January, talking about his experiences.
In doing the process of the review, I learnt as much as the result coming at the far end, which is very interesting. Got it narrowed down that I have a fair idea of the running costs of all my machines now, and makes me think a wee bit more what I'm going to do with some of them and how we progress. Although in the period of time we're doing the review, we've also changed policy slightly and heading towards reduced tillage to try and cut out some of those running costs and worrying metal costs. No major surprises other than the recommendation that I needed to get rid of my sprayer because of overcapacity, but I would counteract that with conditions in the country, and unfortunately we have to be sometimes over-mechanised. We don't have the weller windows that a lot of the rest of the farmers in the UK can work with. We're pretty much minimal on labour. We bring in some casual labour at potato harvest time. Other than that, my dad and I pretty much do everything. So we'd be more interested in spending money on machinery that will do the job more efficient and faster with us as operators, so we have control of what we're doing. One that we have focused on was in the potato end of our business. We bought a George Moe tiller star 7 years ago, and we've now upgraded it 2 seasons ago to a bigger machine. But it's cut out 3 tractors, 3 machines, and potentially 3 operators, which we couldn't source anyway. So we used myself jumping back and forward, and it wasn't very efficient. We can triple our efficiency in planting an acre of potatoes just by investing in that machine. We're starting with reduced tillage is partly to help our soil health, but going forward, we hopefully will reduce our machinery running costs because we'll have a lot less machines, a lot less wearing metal, and we should be fit to cover the ground quicker, making us hopefully more efficient. But we're going to study that this year as part of a trial process using our 3 or 4 different drilling techniques and take them through to harvest and cost them and see which one is most efficient. We have 9 different trials, but it's 3 different cultivation techniques. So we have direct drill, reduced cultivation or non-inversion cultivation, and then ploughing. And then we have that subdivided into your general one pass power hour combination, a disc drill, and then your direct Clayton drill, which is just your straight tine drills. So we're covering hopefully all common bases at the moment, but we're going to continue it for 3 years so that we have sort of more factual evidence behind it rather than focusing on 1 year set of figures and ending up with something that people could question. There's a lot of farmers who wouldn't know any idea what their cost to run some machines are. They just say my diesel cost me and my parts cost me, but they don't take into consideration how much it takes to do each job on the farm and how some subtle differences can long term affect the whole running costs of your business to be more efficient. So I think it'd be a very important topic to discuss.
Tom Rees is also a monitor farmer, farming in Pembrokeshire, and he had a meeting in February to discuss the findings of his machinery review. I went along to talk to Tom.
So I found the machinery review very interesting. It was a lot more thorough than I thought. It took a lot of work and effort to make sure that we got all the figures right. But obviously, because we've benchmarked for a few years through FarmBench, that did make it easier. But I was very nervous beforehand because I thought being a small farm that our machinery costs would be fairly high because we just don't have the area to spread it over. But what became apparent throughout the process once we started getting the results back was that often buying larger kit than you need but using it for longer periods and keeping it and doing the repairs in-house, actually you can often make quite a good economic case from using larger machines. When you're looking at the machinery costs, you're always aware that it's a really expensive cost to the business. Whichever way you go about it, machines are expensive. And at the moment, we were sort of considering the impact of changing our main drilling tractor for a much larger tractor to be able to cope with the size of drill we've got more comfortably. And I was quite concerned that that was going to be expensive and bring our drilling costs up, because at the moment our drilling costs are quite low. But we actually went through the workbook today quite thoroughly. And although the costs are likely to rise from having a bigger tractor, it won't be dramatic. And we should be able to cover a fair bit more ground in a day using the larger tractor also. In Pembrokeshire, we obviously get a really, really high level of rainfall. We average well over 1200 mil a year. And even this year, after the dry summer, I thought our rainfall would be down, but we still come out about average. So we have very short working windows to be able to complete operations, particularly bottleneck during August when you're trying to combine and drill rape often. You want to drill rape into fields that haven't even been combined. So what we've tended to do as a business is buy larger kit than we need and have an older kit. Rather than buy a new, we buy something that was 5 or 6 years old, secondhand and depreciated. We also don't have a huge amount of labour at home. It's just myself and my father most of the time. So also having large kit often means that we can be combining, drilling, rolling and spraying all in the same day, and being able to have plenty of kit at your disposal, it does help with that. But obviously that comes at a cost, because whichever way you work it, the small scale of the business means that our overall costs are higher. Because we're blackgrass free, we probably won't use contractors. We don't use contractors at the moment, and we're not likely to, even though there is a case in 1 or 2 of the jobs that we do that possibly a contractor could save us money. But I've got such a fear of bringing blackgrass onto the farm that I don't want to do that. So we're not going to make any drastic changes over the review, but we'll probably perform the review in-house each year from now on, and that'll help us make decisions on when we feel that a machine should be replaced. And I think we're in a far better position now to have a real economic case for changing any machine, because we know where the costs are. We're not just sort of putting our finger in the air and estimating.
That's all for this episode. Next time, we'll be hearing from Gemma Pament and the Beef and Lamb team on the GrassCheck GB project, which aims to help farmers improve their management of their grassland. All the information and relevant links for this episode will be in the show notes on your podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Thanks for listening.